Blog Talk Radio. Hi there, I'm Katrina Blankenship, your host of Community Radio. Along with many special guests, we look into the strengths and weaknesses of local communities. Did you know that the strength of a community comes from the strength of its people? This radio broadcast is a grassroots project to build communities one person at a time. This Katrina has been through a hurricane myself. Through my journey, I continually meet people who are just like me, and I want to share our lives and our experiences with you. We're all learning on this journey, and why not learn from one another and help encourage and build one another to build a strong community? Listen right here every Thursday evening at 8 p.m. on Katrina.com. You'll be inspired. If you'd like to give us a call during the show, our number is 1-877-598-8549. That's 877-598-8549. Join in with us through Facebook or through our online chat here. Now, it's time for Community Radio. Welcome to Community Radio, ladies and gentlemen. It is a blustery 14 degrees where we are in Central Virginia. I don't know where you are and what the temperature is in your neck of the woods, but I tell you one thing. It has been cold this week, but so beautiful. We have been very fortunate to get 10, 11 inches of snow. We're very happy here in Central Virginia. Some people are not very happy, but some people would complain. You know, they complain if it's snowy. They complain if it's too hot, it's too dry, it's too wet. They've got to complain about something. Welcome to life, I guess. You know, we need this snow and we need these frigid temperatures because there has been so many people who've been sick and under the weather ever since the beginning of fall. You know, they've been so many cases of flu, and the doctor was telling me the other day, a friend of mine that's a physician, was telling me that so many of the flu shots that people got and the pneumonia shots did not work because it was a different strain, a different form of the flu, and different form of some of these bacteria that have been floating around. So a lot of the immunizations that people got ahead of time, it didn't do them any good. Well, you know, I tell you one thing, we might have a lot to complain about, you know, but people may think they have a lot to complain about, but they really have nothing to complain about. If you live in Central Virginia, I'll tell you one thing, we should not fuss because the people in North Carolina have had nothing. In Tennessee, they have nothing but ice. So they are like stranded. A lot of people can't do anything. A friend of ours lives in Tennessee, and she sent me a message a couple of days ago, and she said, Katrina, I just don't know what else to do. We've got to go away on Friday. We have no choice. And we live at the top of a hill. We can't get any grip on the vehicle at all. We had 4 inches of ice. There is no way anybody can go anywhere. And she says, we don't know what else to do other than take hot pans of water, and they live way up the hill. So she said, I don't know what else to do other than, you know, try to melt the ice, and that's impossible. It's freezing temperatures. So she sent me a picture later on that day. I could not believe what they did. They took the tiller, and they brought it inside and got it all warmed up by the fire. They have a wood fire, and they got the tiller warmed up, and do you know, I think it's like 4 or 5 hours it took them. They took the tiller and went up and down the driveway, up and down that hill, breaking up that ice to where they could get some traction and get the vehicle at the bottom of the hill. Now, I don't know. They probably could have just slid all the way to the bottom of the hill with the vehicle, but then, I don't know. If your luck is like mine, then you'd probably run into a tree, or you'd have no control over the vehicle, or something like that would happen. But, you know, a lot of other people that are complaining right now about the weather are these guys in Daytona Beach, Florida, that are down there getting ready for the big Daytona 500 this weekend. My husband was telling me when he came in this evening, he heard Eli Gold on MRN talking about how cold it was in Daytona. It's 45 degrees down there today, and with a wind chill factor of like 35, 39 degrees. And they're having the duels tonight in Daytona, which is where they choose who's going to be the second, I mean, from the third position all the way to the 43rd position for the race this coming Sunday. Jeff Gordon was on the pole. Jimmy Johnson was second. And for everybody else, they have to, quote, unquote, qualify during the duels tonight. And their cars are set up for warmer weather, so they're not doing very well because it's so cold down there. And so it's 45 degrees, you know, like I said, with wind chill factors, very cold this evening, and their cars are set up for warmer weather. This coming Sunday, the race is supposed to be, you know, held on Sunday, and the weather is calling for 78 high and a low of 56. So those cars will be really confused, and, you know, there's nothing they can do about them. So I know that it is just a waiting game. This weekend's race will definitely be interesting. But I know one thing that will happen. Oranges will certainly be higher this year. We have nothing to complain about, though. At least we're still alive. You know, there's so many folks that are facing turmoil. They're facing tragedy. And I'm definitely not making light of anything that's going on in our country or in our world. But we do have a lot to be thankful for, and we have a lot to be grateful to God for living in a country that's free, living in a country that we can still express our thoughts, our interests, have a radio show like this where we can get together, we can sit and talk about issues and problems and things that are going on and talk about the good things. You know, our country is really facing a lot of terror, a lot of problems. ISIS is getting closer and closer here in America. We don't know from one day to the next, even our neighbors. You think you know people, you just don't know who people are and what they're capable of. And I know there was a story I saw this afternoon. I was at a customer's business, and they had the television on there, and I saw the news come on, and a family in Goochland, Virginia, was held at gunpoint. Somebody came to, I don't know all the details, but came to rob them, and robbed them, you know, in the middle of the snow. They walked down the long path to get to the house, and, you know, people are really facing a lot of problems. And, you know, it seems like our liberties are being taken away one at a time. And it's not just the government that's taking them away. It's people that we are around that are taking away the opportunity we have to live in a country that's free, to live in a home, a community, and be able to share God's word and share our thoughts and share, you know, the things that we believe in and what we stand for. And I tell you, there's a group of people in North Carolina who is, I think, probably good and fed up with what's going on. Those of you that have been following us for the past few weeks know that we talked about a situation in King, North Carolina, a couple of weeks ago, and I won't go into all the details right now because I have a guest who's going to share a little bit about the historical piece of it, but they had a rally to try to get the citizens together, not just in the town of King, North Carolina, but also in other communities and all up and down the East Coast. And there are people who came to this rally from all over the United States to came in to tell the town that they were supporting them and they would do everything that they possibly could to support them to put back up the Christian flag and back up the soldier kneeling at the cross, kneeling at the tombstone or the grave site. And many of y'all have seen those statues put up from time to time. But someone in the town, an atheist, was offended at the Christian flag flying at the Veterans Memorial. And so they had a rally. It's been two Saturdays ago now. And we talked a little bit about it last week. We kind of gave a little bit of a follow-up of what happened at the rally. And I have Major Dave Getz with me tonight, and he was one of the coordinators, also with Daryl Calloway and his wife Paula. A lot of people came together. They had incredible speakers. They had incredible music, bringing so many patriots together to fight for what's right and to fight for our constitutional rights and to fight for Christianity and fight for God. And I have Major Dave on the line with me tonight, and I'm going to let him fill you in a little bit on the historical part of what happened in King, North Carolina, and what the steps were leading up to the rally, and also what's happening now, because now that the rally's over, there's a lot of things that are still going on in the local papers and people talking and conversations going along, and we need to know where this event stands now and what is the next step for King, North Carolina. Major Dave, are you with me tonight?
Good evening, Katrina. It's an honor to join you.
Well, it is an honor to have you here with us tonight. And I know I didn't do justice to the event and what happened with the rally. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened in King and what stemmed all of this controversy in this situation in this town in North Carolina?
Well, several years ago, the town... Actually, I'm not the foremost authority on it, but it was either the Appearance Commission or the Arts Council commissioned the building of a Veterans Memorial in King. And numerous designs were submitted. One was finally approved by the town, and it existed. It was built and existed for a number of years, actually, with no one voicing any complaint whatsoever. And then, I believe it was in 2010, a veteran who lives in King filed an objection with the city council and eventually took it to the status of a federal lawsuit for two reasons. One, of the numerous flagpoles that adorned that memorial, one of them was flying the Christian flag. And the other was a metal silhouette depicting a soldier kneeling over a grave that had a cross on it. And the argument was that these were in violation of the First Amendment. And the case was never decided by the courts. It was actually withdrawn by the complainant as a condition of the financial settlement that was reached. Basically, what happened is attorneys for the Americans for United for Separation of Church and State brought in their attorneys. There were attorneys for the town, neither of whom actually lived there, sat across the table, counted a few dollars, and came up with a monetary figure. And on that basis, the complainant withdrew his lawsuit, so it was never settled by the courts. And the Americans United for Separation of Church and State now walk away with $500,000 so that they can go attack some other town and their memorial.
Mm-hmm.
And it's created a number of issues for civic leaders across the nation, really, as to whether their liability insurance policies are sufficient to cover the legal defense of these. Of course, my question is, where is the United States attorney in defending our rights if they are challenged as such in federal court? The whole thing really came down to a matter of dollars, and that's probably the saddest part of it, because the issue has not been decided and won't be until a similar case works its way through the courts and in some other case in some other town. So we're in limbo. But as to the rally itself, a number of people from far beyond King got involved in pulling this whole thing together. Jeff Browning from down in Wilmington with 2 million bikers was instrumental in developing that portion of the turnout and the show of support for the people in King. And, of course, we've all been criticized as being outsiders, you know, interlopers. Why are we even bothering to come to King?
Mm-hmm.
And the short answer is North Carolina has a long history of going wherever we are needed in the battle for liberty. You know, our colonial militia didn't just fight on North Carolina soil. They fought in other states. We go wherever the battle is. And when the people of King, Daryl and Paul and his wife, reached out to me and asked me to come and assist, I agreed. I accepted. So I was there at their invitation. And the criticism is just an attempt to diminish the outstanding turnout and the show of support that we received that day. The police chief was interviewed, and in her estimation of the crowd, in her own words, was in the thousands. We believe it was around 1,200. We know there were 280 actual motorcycles that showed up, and many of those had tandem riders. So that's several hundred people just from the biker community alone. And there were buses brought in from churches, but the parking lot was full. Adjacent parking lots were full. The entire town just turned out in a major showing of support for their own right to have their voices, their beliefs, and their choices represented in the laws passed by their local government.
Right. The event itself took place there at the amphitheater, there at the Veterans Memorial, and it really is, it really does get to you when you pull in there and you see all these flags flying and that lonesome flagpole where the Christian flag once flew. I tell you, when we pulled in there that morning, that'll get to you if nothing else will. And we walked over to the memorial, and even the rope has been taken down. So no one could come in there, you know, during the night or whenever they wanted and put a flag up. So what do the citizens in that community feel like? What kind of response did you get from the citizens there about the whole situation and how it is at this point?
Well, to be honest, there's a very mixed bag of emotions, from sheer desperation and despair to just a quiet resignation that, oh, well, it is what it is. We've got to live with it. And and a lot of variations in between. The perspective that seems to be coming to me, and when I look at our Constitution, our laws, and our founding documents, that the solution to the problem was not to take down the Christian flag. The solution would have been for those who wanted some other flag flown to exercise their voice to their representatives on the town council and have them vote to install an additional flag of some sort. If they felt they were not represented, the idea is not to remove the representation of some other group from the town, but to have them lobby. That's how our representative process of government is supposed to work.
Right.
It is not supposed to allow one disgruntled person to define the outcome for the rest of the entire town. And it's kind of interesting.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I was going to say that it's interesting that one of the stipulations of the settlement of the lawsuit and its withdrawal was that they had to remove that metal silhouette. And they replaced it with a very similar one, only instead of the actual cross depicted, it had an inverted rifle on a bayonet with a helmet on top. And what people don't seem to understand is that is called the soldier's cross.
Mm-hmm.
It is a symbol that predates not only the death of Jesus, but even three wise men following a star in the east. It goes back to the days of fighting with swords. And when the warrior fell on the battlefield, they stuck his sword in the ground where he was buried because he no longer needed it. And that cross has no religious significance whatsoever, but it is part of the warrior ethos that has followed us into our history and our legacy here in this country. And one person assigned a purely Christian meaning to one symbol, especially a veteran, makes me wonder, you know, why is that one person's interpretation binding on all the rest of us?
Well, and the odd thing is the gentleman who caused all the ruckus is a veteran himself.
That's correct. Well, if any figure of a cross is inherently a Christian symbol, is our Military Distinguished Service Cross a Christian award? I don't think so. The Cross of Argonne that sits at Arlington National Cemetery, is that an inherently Christian symbol? You know, our own national cathedral that was commissioned by our Congress in Washington has a cross on top of it. The Supreme Court has the Ten Commandments carved into the doors and in the stone on the outside. And in the People's House in Congress, of all the portraits that adorn the walls, every one of those leaders is in profile except that of Moses, whose portrait is shown in full face over the main entrance. We have a religious heritage in our nation that is not attributable to any one particular religion or denomination. And in fact, Katrina, our Declaration of Independence is what tells us as a nation that there is a God, because it states that's where our rights come from.
Right.
And even if you don't accept the Bible, you were born into a country that believes there is a God, even if you yourself don't.
Right, right.
And nothing in that right for that person to be an atheist or believe as they choose gives them the latitude to change our history.
Absolutely. Let's talk for a minute about the rally and the speakers that were there.
Yes.
There's one thing that I want to really bring out, because as I sat there that day and I listened to all of the speakers that you had lined up, they each had a very distinctive purpose in their speech, in their talk.
Yes.
They talked about the different problems that we have in America, whether it is upholding the Constitution or fighting for our religious freedom or getting out there and showing your support and being stronger in your faith and in your commitment to America. But there was one person, and I don't have his name in front of me. You might know exactly which one it was. I believe he was a pastor. But there's one speaker that actually radiated to me that what the majority of the problem we have with people being so offended in America, and everywhere you turn around, they're afraid they're going to get sued. And he talked about, and I had never thought about this as serious as he brought it out that day, he talked about the problems that we have in America stems to the mismanagement of our court system. And the problems that people have in every, whether it's business or personal or government or any way, our court systems are so misconstrued and so unorganized and so fouled up that's why everyone is so scared. They're scared they're going to get sued on everything. Can you talk to me about that just a little bit and talk to the listeners tonight about that one particular speaker's talk about our court systems and why that's playing such a big part in our problems in America?
Well, you're correct. I tried to get a diverse lineup of speakers who brought their own unique perspective to it to paint the larger picture. Because, frankly, the last thing anybody wanted to sit there was hear six or eight people get up and say the same thing over and over again.
Right.
And the gentleman you referred to is Reverend Rit Verriel.
Mm-hmm.
He is a pastor from Elizabeth Baptist Church in Shelby, North Carolina. He a graduate of the Citadel, former regimental commander there, 82nd Airborne Ranger veteran, who eventually heard God's call to the ministry and left the military. And so he brought that combination of veteran military service and pastoral perspective to his comments. And
mm-hmm.
the point I believe he was trying to make about the courts is that, you know, we as a people, we don't think anything about, for those who do, about contacting the White House and expressing our opinion or contacting our elected representatives in Congress, either the House or the Senate. But nobody reaches out to the court. They're the third branch mm-hmm. of government. And isn't
right.
the court just as obliged to listen to we the people as the other branches of government and to consider with due consideration what the will of the people actually is? Now, granted, and I don't say that carte blanche, because even we the people can get it wrong at times. I mean, we the people approved slavery at one point all the way up to and through our Constitution and said it was fine and legal and okay. And I'll get back to that in a moment. But what he was saying was that as long as we are intimidated by the power of the courts, especially when the courts assume powers not given to them in the Constitution, that is where we become the slaves of our government. That's where we feel the strongest tyranny, because we feel we have no recourse over it. And yet we, the citizens, have the ultimate power in this country. That is what our Constitution says. You know, we first pass constitutions in our states, and then our states pass the federal constitution, and none of that made either one superior to the former. And if you take that limited view of the U.S. Constitution, none of this would be happening today. We've really allowed the government to grow beyond its original intent. And that's what he was saying and encouraging us to get more active in the political realm, because many of our local judges are elected officials. They are the ones who mature through the legal system and eventually get the appointments to these higher seats on the higher courts. And we have to start building now to get a different breed of jurist appointed to those positions if we are to have any expectation of preserving our fundamental rights and liberties in this country.
Well, and you know, what it's doing now is now we're in a situation where we have our own president and members of Congress and those that are in the president's cabinet that are not upholding the Constitution, and they're breaking the law, and we can't even get the court system to try these people who are breaking the law.
Right.
And what does the people do to fix that? Right.
It's another.
And what does,
yeah, it's another form.
What can the people do to change that?
Well, the first thing is they start making their voice heard, just like we did at the rally.
Right.
And I think you're going to continue to see more rallies. Those things were rarely even heard of before 2010 with the rise of the Tea Party and the other grassroots movements. And it has been a growing effort across this entire nation. As I said on your show last time, I know there are at least 170 different such conservative groups of one type or another just in North Carolina alone. And they keep springing up as more and more people wake up and become aware of just what's going on around them. And the more we stand up, the more our elected officials are bound to listen to us. They cannot ignore us.
There are so many people.
It's a test of wills. You know, who's going to stand up and blink?
You're right. You know, and people are so afraid. They're so frightened to make their voice heard, and they have to get past that point in every situation. It starts at a very, very local level. When you're, you know, you and I were talking earlier today about writing a letter to the editor of the local paper about what was going on with the rally and, and people, you know, voicing their opinion back about that. And I want to talk about that in a minute. But when a local community gets involved and they start by getting good people to run for office and those that are not doing the right thing once they get in office to stay on them and continue to keep their doings exposed, you've got to expose them. A lot of people don't want to do that. They don't want to talk about those things. But on a local level, we have to start at a very tiny level and then work our way up. You know, people are so scared to do that.
Well, they are. And actually, our discomfort points to how dependent we become on comfort and convenience to actually do what we do in our own behalf. We're not accustomed to the hardship and the sacrifice. Frankly, I think the generation that won World War II might not have done as well had they not personally gone through the deprivation of the Great Depression just a few years before in their lives. They were quite accustomed to sacrificing and doing without in order to get by. And that whole mentality, that personal orientation, position them much better to embrace the hardships that came to them because of the war, not just the ones who went and fought it, but those who stayed back here and had to endure the rationing and stuff that went on in our economy so that we had the materials to give to our fighting men and women to give them the best chance of success. And so today, people want to sit home and do everything from a keypad and a touch phone, and they really don't want to have to exert any energy. We pay people to haul away our garbage and mow our grass, and they live in gated communities with homeowners associations that take care of all of that, and we've really gotten away from our personal ability to be self-sufficient.
And
that's
and
what
responsibility,
we've got to start doing
right. back. You're exactly right, and it takes every family to get a grip and to take control of television time, you know, computer time, internet time.
Right.
Children are not taught anything. There's no there's no discussions at the kitchen table because nobody's at the kitchen table anymore. There's no,
right.
you know, family suppers, and there's no talk about the day and talk about the news and talk about what's going on in the community and the church and the world and the state and the government, you know, on every level. And children are so, I hate to say it, but they're so blind. They're so uneducated. They have no idea what is really going on in the world. And then they grow up, and all of a sudden they're thrown out there to be made, you know, to decide who to vote for, and they don't even know mm-hmm. how to go and dig and find out who's the right person to vote for. And they don't take care of their family. You know, it's just really sad. People don't garden anymore. They don't put up their own food. They don't know how that if the light's cut off, you know, and so many people have been complaining, you know, while we were talking in the beginning of the show about the weather, you know, they don't even know how to make it for a day or so without
right.
milk and bread and movies and popcorn and all those kinds of things. And so you're right. It has to start one family at a time.
Well, it does. And I go back to my own experience. I was obviously in elementary school in the early 1960s. So I was in grade school when they took prayer out of the schools. And before they did, we didn't have people shooting up schools.
Right.
Because the school system not only taught facts, they taught values.
Right.
And that's what we've taken out of the classroom. And frankly, as long as our school systems continue to focus totally on what the kids carry home in their heads and ignore what they carry home in their hearts, we are going to keep going down the same slippery slope.
Right.
Anything that has
You're
to do
exactly
with
right.
a moral value, anything that has to do with a moral value is now taboo.
You're exactly right. And you, I want to talk for a minute about what you as a person are doing to take it to the next level. Yes,
sure.
You had the rally there. And you put together all of the speakers and the music and the event that day, and I think people went away with a sense of more encouragement to be strong, to work together, to look at what's going on in their own communities, to stay alert, stay focused, and to continue to talk this.
Right.
But you have taken it another level. You have gone now and you have started a group, Chamber of Conservative Leadership. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I actually got involved in politics myself in 2010. A local gentleman here, a Navy veteran, was running for Congress, and I got involved in his campaign. He had no history with the party. It was very much a grassroots organization. And with a handful of grassroots supporters and less than $200,000, he pulled 45% of the vote against a five-term congressional incumbent. He almost won. And that really opened my eyes to just how potent grassroots citizen activism could be. And as I continued to go around the state and meet these other great people and the groups that they formed, there was no unifying body to it. And the
mm-hmm.
last thing any of them want is a higher headquarters telling them what to do.
Right.
You know, that's why groups like Tea Party Express and stuff like that really haven't gained any traction with the local groups as a formal relationship. And so I looked for a business model that would provide that umbrella of unity without becoming a dictatorial hierarchy, and I settled on the Chamber of Commerce, their
mm-hmm.
business model. They don't tell you what business to be in. They don't tell you how to run it. But they offer a forum that the hairdresser and the auto mechanic can find benefit in coming to the table and talking with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And so under the Chamber, what we hope to do is to fund those groups, not to pay for what they do, but to give them, for example, seed money. If they want to sell
mm-hmm.
hats and T-shirts at their county fair, unless one of their members takes the risk and takes that money off of their own hip to buy them up front,
mm-hmm.
they can't do it.
Right.
And if we can fund some of that, and what told me that this was feasible was going to an event here in North Carolina, January 5th of 2013, I believe it was, our governor's first event as governor, a new Republican governor, is a fundraiser for homeless veterans. And they raised $225,000 that night for homeless veterans. And I'm looking around that room, Katrina, and I know a lot of the faces in there. They're the
mm-hmm.
conservatives. They're people I deal with in this same realm. but they're not the type to stand on an overpass with a sign or stand in the rain in a polling place and hand out palm cards.
Right.
But they were writing those checks because they knew that the Veterans Leadership Council had the executive level of credibility to guarantee if I write this check, X, Y, and Z are going to happen.
Right.
And that's
right.
What's missing from the grassroots. So we have put together a board of directors with myself, the Reverend Mark Harris, who ran for Senate, who you heard speak at the rally, one of our state senators, Joyce Kravick, who has a long history with Freedom Works, Clarence Henderson, one of the original four Woolworth's lunch counter sit-in demonstrators in Greensboro, North Carolina, back in the 1960s, and then a lady, Mrs. Pat Hilliard, from here in Raleigh, who is very active in social and civic and political groups. And we did it that way, so we brought in that executive level of credibility, and yet none of them have a direct history with any of the major grassroots groups like Conservatives for Guilford County or the Mortise Citizens, the more prominent and more well-known groups, to say that, well, one group is really running that train. We didn't want that. And in fact, our state chair and vice chair of the Republican Party have been to our planning meetings. They agree. But they have the same seat at that table as any other person. They have no influence.
Great.
We want to provide training for local candidates out there. When we can get these people to run for the town council of King, unless they know through their friends, they rarely may raise $2,000. But an 18-year-old kid with a camera off the shelf from Best Buy can now, and a decent computer can now produce a studio quality video. As an advertisement, they can spread it over social media in a matter of minutes for a fraction of what campaigns used to have to pay major production houses to put together and film to get a candidate's message out there. It's collecting the toolbox and making that toolbox available to more and more people, because by that unity, we can do it at a fraction of the cost of each individual person having to go out. But understand that this is a faith-based organization. It is not inherently Christian. It is not inherently Jewish. It is a faith-based organization because that declaration states there is a God. And we believe that in order to preserve our rights, we have to first acknowledge that they come from God, whatever you believe him to be.
Right.
And that will separate us from a lot of the libertarians.
Absolutely.
That function in the Republican Party. They share our values on limited government, lower taxes. They just have a different basis for pursuing it. And I personally tell them, what good does it do to solve the fiscal problems of our nation if all it does is make us better able to afford our own moral decay?
Right.
We have to address both sides of that equation if we are truly going to heal this land.
Well, I think it's a wonderful direction that you're headed, especially when you're talking about the candidates who are coming on board. This November election is going to be huge. I don't know how it is in North Carolina. I know in Virginia, most communities are voting, a lot of their boards, a lot of their local elections take place in November this year. And like for my own county, we would have all the members of the Board of Supervisors up for election, the sheriff, all the constitutional officers. That can either make or break a community, and that is across the country. You know, when November rolls around this year, it's a huge election, and now we've got the presidential election coming up next year. And it's so important to get these candidates trained to know what to do and to know how to deal with the public, because sometimes they're great candidates. They're going to do a great job once they get in office, but they don't know how to market themselves to get them out there and get their mission out to the citizens. And then, therefore, they depend on yard signs and signs on the side of the road, and not everybody votes because of the name they see on the side of the road. They do really care about those people who come door to door. And I know, we had a special election here in February a couple weeks ago, and we had I had someone tell me, well, oh, my goodness, it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The polls close at 7. I got to run, go vote. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to vote for the person who came and knocked on my door. And that happens a lot. you know, whether they even believe what they this person is saying, they'll just go vote for the one who knocks on their door.
That's true.
So
well,
now
we did away with straight ticket voting in North Carolina last year in our legislature. And so that has eliminated the option for people just to simply go in and push one button. They actually now have to pay attention and and know who the candidates are and think about them. And that was a great step towards getting people engaged. And, yes, some people don't want to be bothered, but those are the people who are the first victims of their government and the ones to protest the loudest.
You know, maybe along with your chamber of conservative leadership, you could have a way to make some type of manual or list of regulations to help people that move from area to area. You know, we find that, and that may be a little a huge undertaking, but we find that here in Virginia a lot. You know, people will move to the area. They have no idea who their supervisors are. They don't have any idea who, what district that they're in. They don't know, you know, the few things. And, you know, every community should work hard on connecting with their citizens. Their citizens have, you know, it goes back to actually my front page story for the journal this coming week. It's going to talk about where are the leaders. You know, we have so few communities with leaders anymore, real leaders, like it used to be. You know, where there used to be a mayor and there used to be a sheriff and there used to be a preacher and there used to be the hardware store, you know, owner, and there were the handful, the core leaders, you know, the country doctor, the town doctor that took care of everybody, and the sheriff and the mayor and the, you know, it was about five people that if you needed anything, that was the person you could go to. And you could depend on them, that they would not be part of the good old boy network, you know, that they were caring and considerate about every citizen in that community. And we don't have that anymore in communities. And that's,
well,
don't you
that
feel like
because,
that's...
Well, yes. And the distinction between leadership and management is largely to blame for that. And there's a fundamental distinction between the two. And because of our personal connections to the business community, we tend to think of such things in terms of management. We've lost our sight of what real leadership is about. And it has nothing to do with rank, title, or position. Mm-hmm. It has to do with influence.
Right.
People, the definition is leadership is the art of gaining the willing cooperation of the people in achieving the mission. People who can build consensus, who can relay the message clearly and concisely in a way that people can understand, that makes them want to step up and get involved in what is going on and be a part of making that productive change that we all benefit from. And the leadership component, and that's why leadership is in the title of the chamber, because we not only want to recruit candidates who have those qualities, we want to educate people into what to look for in a person in deciding whether they have those leadership qualities they bring to it. And anybody can get up and say, yes, I support the Constitution, I support lower taxes. But what does that say about their personal character and how they're going to relate to the other elected members of that body? Are they going to prevail in those discussions? Or are they simply going to become another person around the table listening? You know, we need to look for those who have that force of character and the moral courage to stand up and not just make the argument, but win the argument.
And to be able to communicate with the citizens on every level. You're talking about leadership, and also to help those people that are part of that group become leaders themselves. And there's never a missed opportunity, you know, to become a leader in your own environment, whatever it is. You know, those people sometimes feel like if they didn't get dropped into a situation where they ran for an office or they became, you know, part of a group, they don't even know how to train themselves to be a leader, and they don't know the confidence to be a leader themselves. And so I think this is great what you're doing in trying to teach these people. You know, there's one thing, not to jump around on the subjects, but, you know, you're talking about candidates too, and sometimes it makes me wonder what we can do to help those people that have already become elected officials. We have a congressman that we've just kind of been watching a little bit the past few months, and it seems like since they have taken on the role of congressman, they're now like a movie star. You know, the hair is perfect, the makeup is perfect. You know,
yes.
I mean, literally, it's almost, you cannot just pick up the phone and call and talk to them, even in an event situation where you might run into, you know, elected officials. Sometimes they turn into these untouchable people. They don't want to talk to the people anymore.
Yes.
You know, they only want to see you at a legislative breakfast or at a dinner where you're going to have to give out $100 to $500 or more for a plate just to be in the room with them. You know, what do you think your group can do to then work with those that are already elected?
Well, we have, as a matter of fact, my term is about to expire as first vice chair of my county Republican Party. When the vote was coming up for the new Speaker of the House recently, we called our congressman. There were six or eight of us county chairs and vice chairs from our district. They called up our congressman and said, we would like to sit down and discuss this vote with you before you make it. And he said, sure, fine. So we went over and met in his office for about an hour. And it was quite an engaging and productive conversation. He eventually did not vote the way we asked him to vote. He explained his rationale in advance for voting the way he was going to vote. But he at least gave us that audience. And we encouraged him then to start holding more town hall meetings when he is back in the district. Don't wait for the people to demand the audience. One of your duties is to return home and report to us of what has been going on in the Congress. That is the way it used to happen in this country. And again, we've allowed ourselves that comfort and convenience of just relying on mass media and hoping that everybody gets the word.
Clint Eastwood, I think, was the speaker year before last at the Republican convention, and he made that same statement that a lot of elected officials, once they get in office, they act like movie stars instead of government employees. Technically, they are employees of the people. You know, I thought that was so. I met him many years ago when I first started working. I worked for the Center for Judicial Studies. Jim McClellan, who ran for the House of Delegates at the time, had a group called the Center for Judicial Studies, and they studied the Constitution, studied the court systems, wrote a magazine, and so forth. And I'll never forget when Clint Eastwood was at a reception in Washington, and I was just 19 years old, very young, very green, didn't know anything about politics or anything else. But I remember meeting him and what an incredible person he was. And when I heard the statement that he made about elected officials and how they are now and what they tend to forget, I'm telling you, I've really held on to his words, and I've looked at our elected officials since I heard him say that. And he is so true. We've got to get these people to stop, you know, once they get into office, stepping up to that level that they're so far above the people, and I don't know what to do to fix it, other than just stay on them, like you're saying, just stay on them, you know, let them know how you feel, let them know what you think, and just continue to correspond with them. But the people have to do it.
Yeah, we do, and if you pay attention to the people who are up there, and get to know something about them. I will use Trey Gowdy as an example. I don't know if the man owns a hairbrush, but that doesn't bother me one bit. The point is, his background is as a prosecutor. He has not forgotten where he came from and who he serves. And when he questions those witnesses at the Benghazi hearings, he is exactly the same as if he were still back in Camden, South Carolina, in a courtroom grilling a witness on the stand in front of a judge. And he has not let that position go to his head and change him. Those are the people that we need to look for as an example to gauge our candidates by when we do our recruitment from our local community for their replacements and their comrades that we put in the chair next to them. And once we have a better concept in our mind, we know what to go look for. But, Katrina, if people aren't paying attention to the political process, they're not even close to even thinking of it in that level of depth.
No,
and that's what is required of us citizens.
They're not. And we focus on the average everyday person with what we do with the radio program and with the journal, and we take it down to the kitchen table level of the families and the people, and that's where you have to start it. You have to talk to the people on their level, to where they understand, and you have to keep pushing them and keep pushing them and keep pushing them, and just keep educating them, just one step at a time. And it takes every household, every family, every person. And
but it has
that's
to happen every
way.
Single generation.
It really does. It does. And you know, I don't know where it stopped. I'm only 40, so in my age, of course, you know, my era of time, my parents talked about this stuff. Of course, my dad pastored our church, and my dad was very vocal from the pulpit for what was going on in our local community as well as our state and federal government. My father was very intent on teaching people how to be wise and to be alert and to stay focused on what was going on. A lot of preachers do not do that. So there's nobody from a spiritual standpoint telling them what's going on, and also from what the Bible says. So, you know, when the preachers stop preaching that also, then the communities start to fail, and it makes me wonder. My husband and I have talked about it since God called him to preach 10 years ago. We've talked about it so many times. Is that where it stopped? When preachers stopped preaching it and stopped leading the communities, is that where it stopped? So therefore, the family stopped telling their children and stopped telling their grandchildren. And is that where the problem started at that point?
And I've given a lot of thought to that. And honestly, I don't criticize or condemn our grandparents and parents. They wanted us to grow up in a degree of innocence that allowed us to spend our earliest years without having to address all these issues that are currently front and center in the classrooms. Mm-hmm. You know, even the grade school kids, even in elementary school, are having to embrace alternative lifestyles because of what
That's
we've
ridiculous.
Let it become.
It is
and,
so wrong.
You know, it is a generation growing up to believe that I am only safe when I am surrounded by armed government agents. We put school resource officers. Isn't that a cute term, a polite term, so that we don't elevate anybody's sense of fear? And because of that, we're losing our capacity to recognize a threat for what it is, assess the risk, and develop an appropriate response. And we keep turning everything over to government. You know, first it was housing, you know, or welfare, you know, for food, and then housing. And now we turned over health care. And it begs the question of what is next, because none of us seem to want to be responsible for ourselves. We want government to do everything. Well, when government provides you everything, they get to tell you how to live.
Right.
And that's the part people aren't seeing, but they're beginning to wake up to, because that's exactly what government is doing today.
I agree with you. And you know, you are so right, you know, about what's going on in the school systems and how these children are faced with so many things that they should not even have to be faced with right now. They are growing up so confused. They don't know what's right and what's wrong anymore. You know, if you have a family that teaches the core principles and the basics of the Bible and what the Bible says and right versus wrong and what morality is and ethics and professionalism and all those kinds of things. You're teaching them, your children at home, and then you ship them off to the public school. Then they're inundated with all of the rest of the mess that they have to try to sort out in their head and figure out which one they're going to follow. It's really a shame. The children are a mess in this country.
Well, and they're the next generation, and they are only going to be able to teach their children what they know, what they've learned. And that's why we are being so active and vocal at the grassroots level to try to remind people of just what it is that we have been losing in this country. You know, when I hear how our founding documents are being taught in the school systems today, and the mandate that they leave any reference to God out of it, it reduces our Declaration of Independence to saying nothing more than, "Dear God, thanks for the victory and the rights. We don't need you anymore. We'll take it from here."
Mm-hmm.
And that is not what that document said. They don't understand the importance of divine providence. And the whole religious First Amendment was meant to address the relationship that they fled in England between the Church of England and the Crown. And it was to stop either one from having direct authority over the other. It was not to remove religion from the public square or even our laws. The words separation of church and state are not in the Constitution, and it's amazing how many people today think they are.
Isn't it amazing?
Goebbels, Hitler's propaganda minister, Joseph Goebbels, said, "If you tell a lie and tell it big enough and tell it often enough, eventually people will believe it."
I know.
What Joseph Stalin said, you know, "Let me control the schools for 4 years and I'll own the next generation." And he's
I've heard the saying a lot lately. What is it? Deceive and divide?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
destroy, and divide, or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It goes back to the old divide and conquer.
And they're
creating division in this country on racial lines, socioeconomic lines, any way that they can divide people to keep us from being united. But the three things that hold this nation together are the three things that Stalin also referred to. He said if we could ever be separated from our spirituality, our morality, and our patriotism, we would collapse from within. Because those are the three legs that hold our nation together. And even today, if you look at our military, they are being challenged on all three. The patriotism of our highest leadership is being debated. Is it to the Constitution or is it to an elected official who they depend on for their commission? Because the president can fire them at will.
Mm-hmm.
Their morality, their ranks have become a moral test bed for what was once considered immoral and decent and totally unacceptable in civilized society. And their spirituality, our chaplains, are being ordered and regulated into silence on the very values on which our nation was founded and that these brave men and women are supposed to be out there defending.
And they are quickly
removing. The future does not look bright.
No, it doesn't. And our government is removing those in military who are the strongest and who are the leaders that we need. And our military is weaker today than it's ever been, ever.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
those that are in leadership.
And I hate saying that as a military person. You know, as a retired officer, it pains me to say that.
Right.
But many people don't know that the basic trainee today has a stress card in their pocket. And if they feel that the training is too tough, they can pull out that stress card and take a break and go chat with a counselor. Katrina, that does not prepare our young men and women for the rigors of war. This is not a college frat pledge they're going through.
No.
This is preparing them for combat. And we wonder why they come back with PTSD. It's because we have not prepared them. Because we ourselves didn't get prepared. And the next generation has now not been prepared. And we are losing our ability to stand up as the force on this globe that we once were because we've totally corrupted the core values that made us great.
You know, there are men and women who come back from service who definitely have a lot of problems, a lot of baggage, a lot of things. You know many, many people that go through it too. But there comes a point in your life where you've got to get a grip. And you can't always keep popping pills or reverting to alcohol or drugs or suicide or whatever to get through, you know, or to eliminate, you know, the issues that you're dealing with. And, you know, it's a real shame because we have so many young men and women who are coming back from here in the past few years, just and it's so much more now than it was, you know, years ago, right? I mean, here in the past few years, you hear so much of it and so much suicide and so much, you know, these guys coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan and, you know, it's just such a shame. You know, they cannot get a hold of themselves and grow up and get a grip. And it's just sad what they're facing. And the government wants them to declare that they're depressed, that they're got PTSD, they've got issues, and then they can, you know, the goal is to go forward and then continue to declare that these people are not capable of carrying a gun. So that's going to be the next thing, you know, that's going to happen to our our veterans.
Well, this started more than 20 years ago. Before I left the service, actually during Desert Storm, I was assigned to the Pentagon, and I worked in the disability claims office there that handled the medical claims of these returning veterans from Desert Storm. And there was a major policy change during that war that our reservists and National Guardsmen that were called up all of a sudden had a new burden to prove. It used to be that when you were discharged after a period of active duty, any condition that you had was presumed to have resulted during that tour of duty. Only now the government said, no, we're going to presume that it was a pre-existing condition that you brought with you when you were mobilized. And it put the burden on the individual soldier to have to prove to the government that they did not have whatever condition it was before they were called up and mobilized. And these, we're talking about young 19, 20-year-old somethings. They don't know how to fight a bureaucratic war like that. They don't understand the technicalities of putting forth an effective claim like that to get what they need. And it was one of the most heartbreaking jobs I ever had in the military, was having to sign off on those denials, or at least pass on to my boss to sign off on those denials, simply because they hadn't met that burden. And after I retired, one of my first activities was contacting some of those people personally and helping them write appeals so that they could be more effective in preparing their claims and getting them approved. And right. It has, but that's 20 years ago. They've had children now. Those people bring that perspective with them, and it becomes part of their children and will be part of their grandchildren. And it is a legacy that we have built that will be a scarlet letter on our chest as a nation for generations to come because of the way we have handled this. But it all goes back to the local level, like you say. We have to start in our schools and our town councils and our local school boards, county commissioners, and build from there up. It's the only way. We will never change Washington from the top down.
No. Not at all. And, you know, but we have got to continue to keep in the forefront of people's mind these scandals that has been going on in our White House. You know, it's amazing to me how many people quickly move from one thing to the other, and that's brainwashing from the White House down, because it's like the IRS problems and Fast and Furious and Benghazi and all of these different things that we spit these words out now like it's just another word that we're talking about. But we've got to stop. You know, we've got to stop just pushing these things under the rug, and we've got to continue to focus on getting an answer for these and making these people pay for this.
Well, and to go full circle and back to what we originally started talking about in the Rallying King, because one of the questions you posed to me back then was, you know, what do we do going forward? What's happening now? And I have since read a news article just in the last day or two that same Americans United for Separation of Church and State is now going after the state of Kentucky that wants to put In God We Trust on all their government buildings. And they've got that $500,000 war chest to do it with. And so my answer, going back to the people why I went to King, wasn't just for the people of King and their memorial. It's because the implications of this are national. And
Absolutely.
They go to the core of what we stand for as a nation. And we knew that King was just one skirmish in a battle within the larger war.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be prepared and help prepare those in that next location when they get attacked.
Right.
And the more people get interested, the more they get willing to get involved, the more effective we're going to be. And I encourage those who are listening who may never have been involved in politics, if they want to reach out to a grassroots group, please do. There's something for everybody to do. I mean, even if it's only printing 100 flyers on your printer at home to help get a candidate elected, there's something you can do. And when you show up, we understand your despair. We understand your desperation. But when you bring that to a meeting, understand that it can be as disruptive as the opposition. Because it's a negative attitude. And so that's what we want to do, is welcome these people in and channel that energy that they bring into something positive. Because the people who have been out there in the grassroots for the last 5 years, since 2010, are already tired. Many of them are worn out. They have given. They have dug. They have sacrificed. And when you show up, you're the new kid on the block. Well, okay, we welcome you. But understand that. Don't show up and say, hey, we got to do something. Because you're saying it to people who've already been doing something for 4 or 5 years and are worn out because they had to do it without you for the last 4 or 5 years. And, and it's no hard feelings. It's no hard feelings, but just understand that, that when you come into one of those meetings, listen. Don't talk.
Mm-hmm.
Listen.
Right. You're exactly right. Well, I can't thank you enough for all of the time. You spent a lot of time with us on the program tonight, and I really appreciate what you're doing, what you and your wife are doing, and how you're continuing to move forward with making people more aware and also building this leadership group of conservative people. And I'm so looking forward to the direction that you're going and how you're going to continue to grow. And I know by God's grace and with his strength that he is going to take you in the direction that is going to be so good for so many people. And I really appreciate it. I appreciate all the time. I was very touched as a human being, as a citizen of America, being there at the rally, just sitting to listen to what people had to say. I just cherish every word. So I want to thank you personally for everything you've done, because it meant a lot to me and it gave me a lot of encouragement. And I think that all the people that were there felt the same way.
Well, and we certainly appreciate you taking the time and the effort to drive all the way down from Virginia to come and join us.
We were
honored to have you there.
We were happy to be there, and Mr. Sharp and Mr. Brown walked from Summerfield there, and we followed them that morning as they came in. I know there's one thing. You'll have to definitely get Mr. Sharp to come to another event that you have and get him to speak, because he had prepared his 3-minute speech, and then he didn't even get to read it.
He had that opportunity, but as he said, he's a walker, not a talker.
I know. He tickled me. I said, you should have just jumped in there and started talking. And he said, I couldn't say it fast enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
I'll be honest with you. The whole event could have just as easily been canceled with 6 inches of snow, but the good Lord had a plan for that day. We were blessed with almost 60-degree weather and sunshine. But for those who didn't attend, the entire rally is on my YouTube channel. And they can. I broke it up into segments by the individual speakers so that they can see each individual person and their perspective. My YouTube channel is very easy. It's just Major Dave NC, as all one word, Major Dave NC. And even Gaddy Adelman, the Jewish international terrorism expert that spoke, was essential, because he helped us put the Judeo-Christian face on this. Our lieutenant governor sending his message made it almost impossible for our critics to dismiss us as just a small band of local miscontents. And it really is exemplary of a much broader movement that is continuing to gain force and effectiveness in this country. And yes, that frightens our opponents, because they're used to us just sitting at home watching TV and keeping silent, but no more. And that's what I do. My wife and I travel the state. I used to do weddings and stuff. I have all the sound gear. It just sits in my shed gathering dust, and I would much rather put it to use to support groups like this who don't have the funds and the resources to hire or rent that kind of service to put on a production like that. So that's just me doing my part. And when everybody does their part, Katrina, that's when we win.
I agree. Well, you just keep on staying strong, and we're going to stay in touch with you and
Please
you back on the show again soon. And I'm going to stay in touch with you. I've got a couple ideas I need to run by you. So we will talk in the next few days. And I will send a link to everyone for the YouTube. They can go back, even if they missed the rally, they can go to YouTube and search for Major Dave NC, like for North Carolina, and they can go and see the whole rally. You have the whole thing on YouTube, correct?
That is correct. I did not monetize my videos. You should not see any ads. I don't do it to make money.
Well, that's great, and I know you didn't, and you had a great group of people there that were pitching in, doing everything to, from videoing to organizing the microphones to the people, everything. It was the smoothest event I have ever been to in my life.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It was scripted out pretty much time pretty well, and fortunately for us, the speakers kept to their time.
It was wonderful. It couldn't have been any more wonderful. Thank you for all your hard work, and we will stay in touch with you. And may God bless you in your endeavors and to continue fighting for America.
Well, we're fans of Community Journal and appreciate all that you do to bring the conversation to a broader section of our neighbors. Thank you, Katrina.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
You too. Good night.
For those of you that have been listening to the show tonight, we've had Major Dave Goetz on the phone with us tonight, and he has been very instrumental in keeping the story from King, North Carolina, out in the forefront. He helped Daryl Calloway, and a group of people there all got together to put together this rally. And it wasn't a rally like a protest rally. It was incredibly smooth, all positive, very patriotic in nature. It was a way to bring Americans together and to educate them. The event lasted from around 11 o'clock to about 2 in the afternoon in King, North Carolina, 2 weeks ago. He was right. The weather could not have been any more perfect. It was 60 degrees. The bikers were able to come in. The sun was shining. The people were able to come and stand or bring their chairs and sit and listen to music and listen to speakers, and to encourage people from all walks of life to become involved and become more persistent in carrying that torch, to light that fire, kindle that fire like we talk about with or the journal and all, to kindle the fire in every single person, to then share it with their neighbor, and to continue to help keep these things that are going on in our government at the forefront of our minds and our thoughts. And we have to keep these things. I know a lot of people probably get aggravated when we do the community radio program and we talk about good things in the community, we talk about things that are going on across the country, and we always tend to go back and talk about what's going on in not necessarily quote-unquote politics, but what's going on in our world. But we have to keep those things in the forefront of your mind. And for our listeners, if we don't, people don't know. And you shouldn't feel like you get aggravated while listening to it. Because if you don't educate yourself and you don't know what's going on in your community or in your neighbor's community or across the state lines in Washington, then you're not aware. And you have to become aware, more aware now than ever. And it doesn't mean you have to go get a sign and walk to Washington and stand there and fuss in front of the White House. The president's not going to listen to what you have to say anyway. And most of the time, he doesn't even know who's out on the sidewalk. And you don't have to do that. Now, if you feel like that's your way of connecting and that's your way of, now I will say with Mr. Sharp and Mr. Brown, and I didn't mean to say what I did about walking to Washington because they literally walked to Washington, but they, let me tell you, it wasn't standing in front of the White House and Mr. Sharp holding his phone up and saying, Mr. President, you're more than welcome to use my phone to make that phone call. But it was the exposure along the way that did it. and the exposure and the media coverage and the constant talking about it, and the president, yes, getting tired of listening to it probably, and all of that exposure and all of that hype and all of the media presence along the way for both walks, I believe was a huge role in getting Sergeant Tamarisi released from Mexican prison. I mean, that's big. That's important. That proves that walking 600 miles made a difference. It encouraged them to walk again for this rally to bring awareness. It was a little bit different situation. I don't know where they're going to walk again, but you as a person, you as a listener tonight can do so many things in your area, but it takes one person at a time. It also takes a lot of listening and listening to what people are going through. As we've been doing the radio show tonight, I'm always on my computer screen is very busy, just so you know how I work in the studio. My screen has got the studio control panel on my computer screen. I use a microphone to do the show through my computer. But then I have a Facebook screen open of my own personal page, the community journal page, the local pages of my local communities, because a lot of those people are always listening to the shows. And I'm getting messages. I've got my email open. I've got another blog page open. And I've got a couple other chat screens where people are sending me messages back and forth through the whole time we're doing the show. And I am actually just got a message from someone who said that there was a fraudulent document that has been passed around saying that, in fact, let me open it up here, about 2 seconds. It says that these people have gotten this document in the mail that it's a, I think it's called, what do they have called here? Recorded deed notice that you have to pay X number of dollars, and the county of Powhatan is sending it out and is putting a phone number there and everything, and where that you need to send your $83. And it's not a real document. It's not. It's something that is a fraud. But you know what? If you get something like that and you dig into it and you find the answer, then you can get on your Facebook page that has a million friends and all the other people that you know, and you can tell everybody else when things like this happen, whether it's good or whether it's bad, and you are doing your part. You are doing your part. There's a way that you can do your part in lots of different ways. And so, you know, it is so encouraging to see when people work together. We have to use these tools that we have, and we have a lot of tools. I do web design and marketing for a living, so I know the tools are out there. We started the community websites, and what I've been doing with the communities will be 20 years this April. 20 years. I don't even feel like I'm almost that old. But 20 years ago, I said, you know, we need community websites where people know what's going on in the community. I don't care what it is, whether it's the bake sale down the road or the fire department's giving rabies shots or this supervisor did this wrong or the school board members are voting to spend $5,000 of your tax money that shouldn't be done, or whether it's anything that's going on in the community. So we started these community websites a long time ago. And let me tell you, if I want to get word out to people, my lists are huge. I was telling one of my customers today, and I have to tell you this real quick. If you don't know anything about Moorefield Mine in Amelia, Virginia, you have to get online now. Give me about a week, because they hired me to design their website today. I'm really excited to work with them. I've known these folks for a long time, and they actually have a huge mine, 83 acres, I believe, the most beautiful gemstones you've ever seen. They've been mining for, I think this mine is, I think they said 85 years old now. And so for years and years, different families have owned this property, and they mine. But we were talking about the power of the Internet. And for all these years that this one particular couple has owned this mine, they have not used, they've not had a website. And they've only just had other people that have had links and Facebook pages and all that kind of stuff to talk about, you know, their mine. And a friend of theirs that actually owns some type of gem show designed a website for them, but it wasn't always up to date with the things that they wanted to know. So they've been putting it off and putting it off. And so they called me a couple of days ago and said, Katrina, we know you can help us. Can you come over here and talk to us and do a website for us? So I went over today, and I spent 2 or 3 hours with them, and we talked about, they're not big computer people, that they, of course, get their email and get online and surf and things like that, but they're not online like some of us that are younger and they do this for a living or do, you know, use the computer for their business and things like that. So we were talking about the power of the internet, and it was funny because they knew the power of the internet in a negative way. They get phone calls from people that have posted the wrong information, or that they're closed for the season, or they're open this hour, or whatever, or the fees, or, and so we got to talking about that and how the wrong information out on the web can cause more problems than good. And so it is important for you, whether you are just an individual or a business owner or have an organization, to have a website that gets the information out there. A lot of people focus on Facebook. They use social media, and they think that they can put all their eggs in the Facebook basket or the Twitter basket. They don't have a website that they monitor, that they manage, and then they think that that's the only way of connecting with people. And I can tell you, and I'm not saying this for you to call me to design a website for you, but if you need help, I'll call you. I'll help you with that too. But what I'm trying to say is, if you really want a way to connect with people and you want to market to them and you want to give them the right information, you need your own website. You need, and I'm not necessarily talking about you personally, but, you know, if you have your own business, you need to not just use Facebook and Twitter and all these other freebie tools to get your message out there. You need a website that kind of pulls it all together in one. And in case Facebook disappears, don't forget, Facebook could disappear on you in a minute, and you would never know it. And you could lose all of your contacts and all of your ways of connecting with people. And, you know, I'm horrible, most people would say, about mailing lists, because I believe in the value of a mailing list. And no matter where I go, I always have a notebook in my pocketbook or in my hand and a pen, and I don't care if I see people at the grocery store and we talk about this or we talk about that. I say, give me your name and address, and I'll keep you on my list, whatever subject it is. It could be about the community that I live in, or it could be about the radio show, or it could be about what I do business-wise, or it could be about our church, or it could be about an outdoor program that we do with hunting and fishing. Whatever topic it is, I'm going to add you to my mailing list. And that is important, because if you can connect people together when you need to connect them in a split second, let me tell you, you got power to send information to people on a quick basis. I was thinking when Major Dave and I were talking tonight, you know, the one thing that would have made this rally even more perfect, and Major Dave, if you hear this at the end of the show tonight, I have to tell you, or if you miss it, I have to tell you, you know, would have been even better is if you'd had somebody with a notebook walking around through the crowd and getting everybody to sign up on your mailing list. So next time you do an event, I know that's cumbersome, but, you know, it's the way to go. Or if nothing else, give them a piece of paper and say, fill this out and drop it in a bucket or whatever. You know, it's important to keep those people on a list, on a way that you can connect with people. You just never know where you're going to be able to use that. And from a marketing standpoint, like I said, in the future, you know, whether it's your business or whether it's your organization, your church, your club, your friends, just keeping people informed. They want to be informed. They want to know what's going on in their community. They want to know what the subdivision is doing, what the local YMCA is doing. They really want, even if they don't participate, they are informed. And that's important. You might not ever know who's watching your Facebook post. You might not know who's watching your emails, who opens them, who throws them away, who passes them on to 14 friends. You never know that. But you can't stop, because I can guarantee you that somebody out there is really looking forward to the information that you're spreading to them, and they're sharing it with their friends. Look at Facebook. If you just take a few minutes and you sit on the computer and you just watch Facebook and you look at all the things that people are sharing, most of the images and things that you see, people don't even create. I create a lot of my stuff. You'll see my little signature with a K at the bottom when I do a lot of images and a lot of things. And people share stuff out. I do it because I enjoy doing it, and I'd love to do graphics and stuff like that. But a lot of people share. They share songs. They share poems. They share sayings. They share, you know, political ads. They share everything under the sun. And so you think people are information junkies? Just take a look at Facebook and take a look at what people are talking about, and you know that they really are. As far as information goes, I think that the show has been great tonight. I hope it's given you information that you can carry on and you can be a stronger patriot, a stronger American. You can learn more about what's going on in your local church, your schools, your communities, everything that you're involved in. And you can be a stronger person and help your neighbors and help those that are in need, no matter what kind of need that they have. And I appreciate Major Dave being with us tonight on the radio program and kind of talking a little bit about the rally, but also what people can do in their communities to build a strong community. And I appreciate you listening to the show tonight. Next Thursday night, if all works out, we'll have Congressman Robert Hurt on with us next Thursday night. That's what our plan is. And also someone that is in top management for the Sheets Corporation will be with us on the radio program next week. We're really looking forward to that. And talk about Sheets. Sheets covers 6 states now. There are almost 200 different stores. They're on the East Coast. But they have almost a secret formula in creating an amazing corporation. And we're going to talk about that and what they do. Not all their secrets, but we're going to talk about the organizational strategy and the things that they do when they bring a new location to a community. And we're really looking forward to talking to Congressman Hurt and some of the things that they're facing in the General Assembly and some of the things that they're facing on a daily basis in the western part of the state of Virginia. And so I'm looking forward to talking to him next week. And so if you have questions that you would like for us to share with our guest, please send them anytime during the week or just anything you'd like to talk to us about. Our email address is Katrina, K-A-T-R-I-N-A, @katrina.com. And our phone number is 804-598-9301. I appreciate you listening to the show tonight, and thank you so much for all of your support. Please continue to tell everybody about the show, can tell everybody about the journal, and help us to continue to grow. May God bless each and every one of you. Until next week, I'm Katrina Blankenship, your host of Community Radio. Good night.
The flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit on down to Houston, from New York to LA, there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, and I'm proud to be.